Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Well, hello there. How are you doing today? Good morning. I'm Andy Griffin. This is the Andy Griffin Show on KDXU. Jack is here as well. Can you hear Jack?
I had to turn my headphones down. It's about to blow me away. I'm good now.
I actually had a conversation with my buddy who works in ESPN radio, Andy Thompson.
Yeah.
And we
he's a great guy.
He is a great guy.
He is like one of the best guys I know.
He really is.
Yeah.
He really is. But he actually came to me and he said, I got to ask you a question about headphones. And I'm like, well, okay, what's your question? He goes, do you run your headphones hot? Do you run them loud? And then he just waited for me to answer, and then he told me why he asked the question. I said, well, I'm going to be honest, Andy. I like my headphones loud because if I keep them low, I tend to strain my voice by pushing harder with my voice. And then especially if I'm doing like, I mean, you know, one day we had three games back to back to back.
Wow, that's a lot of talking.
Tournament. And by the third game, my voice would be gone. And so I tend to run my headphones really loud so that I don't have to push as hard with my throat. And he goes, you know, that is so good to hear because I've been criticized by several different people who say I run my headphones too hot, too loud, too hot.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, I just wanted to see if other people did that. And I said, yeah, I think it's better for your voice if you run your headphones a little loud.
Yeah, bad for the tinnitus, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. your hearing, yeah.
Yeah, got to turn it up over the ringing in your ears so you can hear it. That's me today. That's true. I went to the ear doctor on Friday.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got some hearing loss.
Oh, that's too bad.
I hate getting old.
Yeah, it happens. Hell. Yeah, and if you're someone like me, I've been wearing headphones my whole life, been on the radio my whole life. Yeah, my hearing is going.
Yeah.
Going. And my dad is hard of hearing, but... he wears the hearing aids. I was reading an article about the stigma of hearing aids.
Mm-hmm.
There's still this thought by most people that, oh, yeah, you're wearing a hearing aid. You must be an old man. He's crippled. And it's actually keeping a lot of people, especially guys with the egos, you know, I don't want to get hearing aids because I don't want to be stigmatized as an old guy with
hearing
aids.
My dad. He's 80 years old. Yeah. And you can hear the TV from... five rooms away, you know, but he wouldn't get hearing aids.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Frustrating. And I, you know, hearing aids are tough because what they do, and they're making strides technologically to fix this, but they expand, make louder.
Yeah.
Amplify. That's the word.
Yeah.
They amplify everything. So if you're in a crowded restaurant and you have hearing aids on, it's actually worse to try to hear the person across from your table because the hearing aids are amplifying the people behind you and the waiter and the
Well,
and
now,
the
noise I just heard an ad,
mm-hmm.
and it said that these hearing aids, whichever
these
they were,
ones?
These
yeah.
were these were professional hearing aids, not the stuff you buy off Temu. but what the doctor does, the audiologist, you know, he'll give, and this is what I got. I got the test, the hearing test, so
mm-hmm.
they knew what frequencies I was not as sensitive to.
Right.
So I had some hearing loss in some frequencies and I was normal in other frequencies. And so what they do is they design these hearing aids to pump up the frequencies that you're low in.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So I thought, well, that would make sense, right?
My wife, it drives her crazy. Apparently her speaking voice is one of those frequencies that uh-huh. people that are hard of hearing have a really hard time picking up.
Especially their husbands.
Yeah. Well, actually, her dad, her father-in-law, my dad,
yeah.
cannot hear her. And
wow.
Unless he, oftentimes I end up as the translator. She'll say something and he'll just look, you can tell the look that you did. And I have to tell him what she said. I
mean, yeah.
That's the way it goes sometimes. But getting old is not.
No, it's not fun.
It's not fun.
We can't.
I did write an article on our website on Friday about knowing when it's time to hang up the keys. Driving is independence for a lot of older people,
mm-hmm.
Younger people too. I remember getting my license. I couldn't wait, you know, but as you get older, you know, you've got to get your eyes tested. You got to get your hearing tested. You got to get your reaction time tested. They have actually official driving competency tests out there. Not the kind of the written test, you know, how close can you park next to a stop, that kind of thing, but actual competency to see if you should still be driving. And I think it would behoove us, those of us that are older, to, and I'm not there yet, thank goodness, I don't think, but to be sensitive to this and not have to have our kids come to us and say, you shouldn't be driving anymore.
You know?
So
let's take you down to the DMV. Let's see what they have to say about it. Then it's not me, it's them.
Well, it's a tough thing because, like I said, it represents freedom. And once you cannot drive anymore, if no one in your household drives anymore and you know, you live alone or whatever, man, you need help getting anywhere.
Well, if you've got the money, you could always do the Uber thing.
Right.
You know,
right.
Which would be, I don't know. I guess if I get to that age, I'll just, you know, say, hey, come pick me up. Call my daughters. Hey, I need a ride. Come get me.
There you go.
I got to go to the drugstore.
And change my diaper first. No, that's terrible. So, anyway.
I did it for you for 3 years.
Right.
That time.
You owe me.
You owe me.
But you know, in all seriousness with the hanging up the keys, I think a lot, you can compensate as an older driver for your experience. If you think about it, if somebody has been driving for 70 years or 60 or 50 or whatever, we've seen it all, right? I mean, you can look up a road and you say, oh, that guy's going to do this, or oh, watch out for that guy. Yeah. He's going to act this way. There's no replacement for experience.
You're a better defensive driver.
So you may not have a good reaction, or you may not see things quite as good, but if you have the experience to plan for stuff, I would contend, and I would argue this for older drivers, that they are in a lot of ways going to be a lot safer because they've seen it.
Yeah, they go slower too.
And they do drive slower.
Yeah.
Good point. I actually drive much slower than I did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Much, much, much slower.
I was, when I was younger, I was like, why don't older people drive faster? They got less time left. That's a 20-year-old mindset when you're behind somebody who's slow.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All right, let's talk a little bit about nuclear power. We've had the conversation before, Jack, about people's fears, you know, and it started in 1945, you know, it was the nuclear bombs that were dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, I'm told it's pronounced, but it's Hiroshima. Mm-hmm. And that was the first real kind of introduction anybody in the world had, except for maybe scientists, to nuclear power, and it scared people, and as well it should have, right?
Sure, yeah. Bombs are scary.
Killed 1.5 million people in you know, 2 bomb drops, and who knows how many more with radiation for years to come. And of course, then we had
actually, fun fact.
Okay,
the radiation. If Nagasaki and Hiroshima are populated cities right now,
they are
very vibrant cities, and the radiation didn't last there because the bombs ignited at altitude.
I did not know
so that the blast force went down and kind of, I don't know, I'm visualizing with my hands downward motions.
Wait, the bomb didn't go off when it hit the ground?
No. It went off at like 5,000 feet or something like
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah. So what it did
is... Did you know that, Stockton? Did you know the bomb didn't... The nuclear bomb, the atomic bombs, did you know they went off at altitude, not when they hit the ground? Stockton, did you know that?
No, I did not.
I'm 58 years old. This is the first I've ever heard that, Jack.
So what happened was, I can't find it here quick enough.
Okay.
But it did go off.
I don't doubt you.
I don't know the exact altitude, but it was up there.
Wow.
So what happened is the radioactivity in the bomb, which basically are little pieces of the plutonium or the uranium-235 that create the bomb core. They didn't mix up with the dirt and create this dust. And adhere to it.
Yeah.
So when you have a bomb, like over here at the test site, when they were doing
Nevada test site,
and we were in the fallout zone.
Right.
That was because they were setting those things off at ground level.
Yeah.
And then that fallout, so it was kicking up all that dust, and then that all that dust would carry the radioactivity with it.
Really?
So what happened up there is that the radioactivity dissipated a lot quicker. So within a year, people were, or whatever it was, they were able to go back in and start rebuilding. So the radiation burns and all that was like right when the thing
flash,
went off.
Yeah.
But after that, it was pretty much over. Now, I could be wrong on that, but I do know that the bomb went off at altitude.
Wow. Wow.
And that's why the city's occupied and it's fine. There's no residual.
We learned. Did you learn something today, Stockton?
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. I think I did.
That's pretty crazy. All right. Thank you. Stockton, appreciate it. So did they play, Jack, do you know, and I wasn't alive at this point. In fact, not too many people left on Earth were alive when the bombs went off. I mean, that was 79 years ago. So you'd have to be...
The bomb exploded at 1,500 feet above the city.
1,500 feet. Wow. So you'd have to be... If you were a little kid, you'd be in your 80s at that moment. Yeah. My dad was born in 35, so he's 89 now. He would have been 10 years old when that happened. So there's not a lot of people that are still alive that were there or mm-hmm. were alive when that happened. I'm curious, how much did Americans know? You've done a little bit of study on. Do you think most Americans knew what was going to happen, or knew this that America was going to do that, or was it a secret?
You mean before?
Before.
Oh, heck no.
Nobody knew anything.
No, it was the biggest secret. On
did
the
they
planet.
Know that we were developing
no,
something like that?
Absolutely not.
Nobody knew.
Absolutely not.
Wow.
In fact, when they I just saw a documentary on this, when they did the first test over
and
at the Trinity site.
And I didn't see Oppenheimer, by the way, so I didn't.
Yeah, but I, when they did that first test over at the Trinity site, mm-hmm. And they didn't know what was going to happen. There was a concern that they were going to ignite the atmosphere
of
the planet.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that they, the whole planet would blow up.
The atmosphere would burn off.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was a bunch of people that were downwind, and there was a Girl Scout or a women's group or a youth group, and that was downwind of that bombing. And they heard the noise, and they were on the other side of the mountain range of in New Mexico. Point, everybody got cancer from that and died because of the downwind. So there were that first sight, but nobody knew what was going to happen. They didn't tell anybody. They didn't tell the locals in New Mexico what was going to happen. It was basically a mystery. And then when they went and did the bomb, you know, they warned Japan, we've got this new weapon and you need to surrender. And they warned them a couple of times.
So they told them, we're going to do something
big. We're going to do something huge, and it's going to end the war, and you need to surrender. And they didn't say where, because they didn't want their air defenses to go up.
Right.
But the people, when they saw the Enola Gay flying over, they thought it was a recon aircraft, because it was just by itself.
Right.
And they didn't think anything of it. And then, of course, it was at 30,000 feet when it was unleashed.
But you can see airplanes at 25,000 feet now. They're little dots, but they're up there. You can see them.
Yeah. So, yeah. Because really from that altitude, you're not going to do anything. In World War II world standards, at that altitude, one bomber is just not going to do it a ton.
So,
unless it's carrying a nuke then.
After the tests and everything, before the bomb went off, the scientists planned, we're going to drop this bomb, and they had planned to ignite it or whatever, set it off at 1,500 feet.
That
was the plan.
Yeah.
Did they know what would happen, do you think?
They had a pretty good idea because they knew that at 1,500 feet, it would kind of cone shape out from the point of explosion and thrust the energy down. Hmm. So the energy that wiped out the city was that shockwave and that blast. And there was, of course, a lot of heat if you were right underneath it, you know. But and that's why you've got shadows burned into the sidewalk of people.
Yeah.
Which was weird.
Yeah. I don't, maybe most people know this, some don't, though. Maybe when there's an explosion, even like if a grenade goes off, a lot of time you don't get killed by shrapnel or by fire or anything like that. You get killed by the shock wave concusses your brain inside your head to such a violent impact that you die. And I'm guessing that shock wave the bomb was the biggest culprit.
I'm not an expert on this whole subject. I'm just saying that did go off at 1,500 feet, like I said. So, and that's why they can occupy the city now. And that's why you can't go build a city out in the middle of the Nevada test site if you wanted to.
Hmm. Yeah. So that dirt is still radiated. All right, so back to the discussion on nuclear energy. The fascinating thing I honestly learned today, I thought, maybe I'm an idiot, but I mean, Stockton and I, we didn't know that. We figured a bomb goes off when it hits the ground, right?
Yeah, it makes sense.
So, okay, back to the nuclear energy. So, nuclear bombs scared people, but the America started building nuclear submarines and powering those with nuclear power.
Right.
Sometime in the next decade or so after
that. '50s. The Nautilus was the first U.S. submarine. Of course, it was based on the Jules Verne 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Right.
Which is where they got the name, because that submarine was powered by a mysterious unknown force.
Yeah, yeah. But then they started building power plants modeled after the model that they built these nuclear submarines with, and they worked.
Sure.
And they were extremely successful.
Yeah.
And America started gaining momentum with nuclear power and sharing it with other parts of the world, and nuclear power plants were built. And then in the late 70s, there was an accident.
Three Mile Island.
Yeah. And a few years later,
and Jane Fonda made a movie about it.
Yeah. Love that lady.
Good old Jane.
Hanoi Jane, that lady?
Yeah, that one.
And then Chernobyl. And sometime, Chernobyl was 86, I think. And at that point, the world got a little scared of nuclear power. Even though it was mostly hype. I think a lot of people were like, a meltdown.
Well, you know, the Greenpeace types, once they got done saving the whales, they wanted to get rid of nukes.
Yeah.
But they were against the nuclear bombs and the testing, which,
of course,
you can reasonably get behind that.
Yeah.
The problem is they conflated the idea. And literally, I lived in Southern California in 1984. And the guy I was living with, he was going out protesting the nuclear power plant right down the street. There used to be one down there at Dana Point.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, he would protest that thing and send letters to the government, the state, and everything, because they were afraid it was going to go nuclear and explode like a bomb, which it can't do.
No, but everybody thinks that. Oh, nuclear power, that thing goes off like an atomic bomb.
Yeah, it's going to blow up.
Five square miles are going to blow up, and we're all going to die.
Yeah. And they were, apparently in California, they've been successful in shutting down all those nukes, nuclear power plants. I think they got one left, Diablo Canyon.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. It's a shame.
It's a real shame, because
it's clean energy. If they're so worried about global warming and carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that humans are putting into it through automobiles and coal-fired power plants, but they're getting rid of nuclear power, which is the cleanest, most reliable, and per kilowatt hour, one of the cheapest that there is out there. And, well, of course, we're going to get rid of it because we're afraid of it might go nuclear.
So we had, after 86, after Chernobyl, a big scare, and you, like you said, protests, and people just didn't want nuclear power anymore. Even though, technically, track record-wise, it was still the safest.
It is. It is the safest. If you include... Of course, nobody died at Three Mile Island. If you include the people that died at Chernobyl and the people that died
at Fukushima,
when you look at per kilowatt, or not kilowatt, but something megawatt hour or gigawatt hour, lives lost per gigawatt hour, it's by far the safest on the planet. It's safer than wind energy. It's safer than solar. More people die on solar energy because they're falling off their roofs when they put them up there.
That's true.
Okay?
It is true.
Yeah.
So, Texas A&M now announced they are building a couple of small nuclear power generators, and they want to have the school powered exclusively by nuclear power few years.
Yeah.
And
probably train up some really cool nuclear engineers to build and maintain that thing.
Yeah. So, is the age of nuclear power going to get here then?
Yeah, there's going to be a renaissance because people understand what it is, and we're finally starting to get rid of that, the bad name.
The stigma.
Thank you. Even who's the governor? Hochul of Wisconsin, the one that's really lefty, really kind of crazy.
Yeah.
She actually signed a thing where they're going to restart a dormant nuclear power plant that mothballed. And they're going to restart one in her state. So, I mean, if you got, the lefties on their side, because they understand that you get all this carbon-free electricity, which is what they care about.
Nearly zero emission. Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah. So. And it's dependable and it's baseload. Wind isn't baseload. Solar isn't baseload. So you've got to, You know, you got to do a whole bunch of different things to make that thing work. In fact, I was watching this video by Tony Heller. By the way, those of you that are interested in the subject, I highly recommend watching Tony Heller videos. He did a thing on the wind energy in Great Britain where they were boasting that they had wind energy provided all their electricity. But you look at the graph and the wind energy goes up and down and up and down and up and down. And they superimposed it with a graph of the gas-powered power plants. And every time the wind energy went off, the gas spun up to cover it.
Right.
And every time the wind energy went up, then the gas spun back down to and so it was constantly doing that. Well, how many people you got to have observing that thing and turning that gas power plant up and down and up and down and up and down? You know, think about starting and stopping your car all the time. How efficient is that?
That's not good.
Compared to with just letting it run.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, you know the point.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, although the new cars, you buy a new car, it has the auto start stop. It turns on.
Yeah, my wife's car's got one of those.
Do you like that?
It's different. I think, you know what it is, in my opinion? I think if you spend a lot of time at stoplights, I get it. Because in the summertime, what's funny, like here, you know, it's 150 degrees inside your car. You stop and the thing turns off.
And it turns the motor and your air conditioner.
The air conditioner turns off.
It stays on.
But it doesn't cool anymore.
Yeah, it's not really working. That's terrible. I actually wrote a story on our website about auto start stop and the idea. You have to, one of the things they've had to do is they've had to revamp the electrical system a little bit.
Yeah.
Because in old cars, if you were turning it off and on at every light, your starter would be shot in no time.
Yeah.
And your battery. And so they've reconfigured those a little bit and theoretically, you know, compensated.
I don't know how you would calculate how much gas you save in a week or in a tank.
I think in our city, Jack, in southern Utah, I don't think it really saves any.
But like in a big city.
But if you were in, even Salt Lake or L.A. or wherever, and you are at a lot of stoplights, I think it actually probably a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
So. I felt a little bit guilty.
Seems gimmicky.
I stopped by the other day, and Jack was out. Jack was coming out, and he came and said hi to me, and I was sitting in my running truck with the air conditioner on.
Yeah, you had the windows all the way up. I couldn't even see in there.
It was hot, man. It was so hot. I'm like, I'm not going to sit it with the engine off in this heat.
So I
felt a little guilty having my idling.
Don't you dare.
In the heat.
Don't you dare, man.
Don't feel guilty?
Do not.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's built in.
The fact you can do that is the best thing in the world.
That's a good point.
You know?
That's a good point. All right, Jack, we got to get a commercial, and I do have a text here. They make a device to prevent it from turning off. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate that. I actually, in my truck, not the one I have now, but the previous truck I had, there's a switch to turn off the auto.
Yeah, you can, stop you can bypass
problem
it.
Is yeah. It default every time you turned your car off and on it, like if you stopped somewhere, like if I park at my garage and then leave, it defaults back to the auto start stop.
Oh.
You had to hit it every single time you went anywhere.
Yeah.
And that was
well, I know on my wife's car when I'm driving it, if I come to a stoplight, if I lightly depress the brake, you know, to get me to stop, then it's fine. If I mash it, then it turns off the car. So there's a little bit of a sensor on the brake.
Here's the other little trick too: is if it does do it and you're burning up, if you'll just turn the steering wheel a little bit, it'll turn the motor back on.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Because my wife has that as well. So, all right, we got to get a weather check in and more with Jack Lancaster after this.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
All right, welcome back. I'm Andy. Jack Lancaster is with me today. Did want to mention coming up on the show this week, we've got some, and Jack is whistling, by the way. And yeah, he's pretty good. let me get to the right page here. I can't find the page. Oh, here we go. All right. Coming up on the show this week, we have tomorrow, Chris Stewart is going to be on the show.
Remember? Chris?
Former congressman. Yeah.
What's he up to?
Spend some time. He's a consultant now, runs a consulting firm, and is taking care of his wife, who's had some serious health challenges. So
all the best to Chris.
But it's been
wife.
Good to have him on. And let's see, Wednesday, Sean Christensen, Chambers of Commerce, will be here. We'll also talk with Dave Romer. And Dave is going to bring a woman who teaches classes on firearms with women, for women, and safety and stuff like this. So this is going to be interesting.
Okay.
We'll also hear from Dorella from Hurricane City. She's, I believe, coming in with the mayor or instead of the mayor on Thursday from Hurricane. Dorella is a native of Greece and Albania. She was born in Albania, raised in Greece.
Yeah.
And she is now the Hurricane Public Affairs Director or something like that.
Wow.
That's going to be kind of fun. So, and a week from today, Jason Chaffetz will be on the air, and we will also hear from...
Is he going to be in studio?
Maybe.
Maybe?
Maybe. Okay. Jason has been in studio a few times, but I don't know if
he... I hear he's got a house in town.
He does, yeah. He lives about... well, he's a snowbird.
Ah, okay.
He gotcha. Lives here when it's not quite so hot. Yeah. So I don't know that he'll be in town because it is pretty darn hot.
There you go.
Right now. And I have someone else coming in on next Monday, too. And right at this moment, I'm like, who is that? Here we go. Yeah, it is Willie Billings is going to come in and talk about statewide caucus 10X plan. I don't know what that is right now.
I don't
do some research on that, and Willie will be in to talk a little bit about that. That'll be cool.
Awesome.
So lots of great shows coming up.
You know what I love about your show?
What's that?
I can go online to kdxu.com. Mm-hmm. Is that the thing?
890kdxu.com.
I Google it so it pops right up because I see the little logo.
Or you can use the app.
And I go to radio. Yeah, I got the app too. Yeah. And I go to Radio On Demand, and then I look up my show. Yeah. And then I listen to myself.
Yeah.
I love that about it.
Some people hate listening to themselves. They're like, ew, I can't stand the sound of my voice.
No, that's I don't like my voice, but, you know, you get used to it.
You really do.
Yeah.
Really do. Did want to talk for a minute, Jack, about hard work. And so we talked a little bit about this on Friday with Father's Day coming up. Now that Father's Day is over, I'm like, well, let's not let this completely rest. Let's talk about hard work. And good article online about hard work. And let's see if I can get to the right page with the article on hard work. But basically, the idea is that it was actually surprising to me, maybe a little bit, that the number two thing that dads were most proud of teaching their children, number one was being a good person, having ethics, mm-hmm. and being good. But the number two thing was they taught their kids, their dads were most proud about teaching their kids the value of hard work. And that's pretty cool. I mean, above all the other things they taught, that hard, teaching your kid to work hard was up there. And I would look, you know, I'm looking at my own kids and I'm like, all right, all my kids work hard. That's good. That makes me feel good. I don't know if I did something right or if they're all just great people, but I'm really proud.
Well, I'm sure you had something to do with it.
Kids were working hard, yeah.
I'm sure you had a lot to do with it.
And I told my daughter, who's now working overnights at a grocery store, bakery, and she's been working 10, 12, 14-hour shifts. And,
wow.
You know, and it starts at midnight. And I'm just like, you know, I'm so proud of you that you understand that if you want to go somewhere, you got to work hard.
Yeah.
That's the key to things. There's a great article online about a guy who he went to Starbucks. I think it was Starbucks, some coffee joint. And he said it was a typical coffee joint. I'm in a typical city in typical America. And he said, this is what I observed. And he looked around and there was to his left, there was a guy on his laptop working. He looked up ahead. There was a lady, and she had a pile of papers, and she was maybe a school teacher, and she was working, grading papers. He looked to her right. There were three students who were huddled together studying stuff. And to his right, there was another guy at work on his laptop doing some other stuff. And he's like, this is America. And no matter what you hear from the loud minority, America is people who work hard still to this day, hard workers mm-hmm. in America. And I like that. And, you know, I think about Europe. They have a 32-hour work week in Europe.
Yeah.
They take 4 weeks off a year.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying we don't deserve 4 weeks off a year. Maybe we deserve a 32-hour week. I don't know what the answer is there. But I think that Europeans, to this point, still go, wow, Americans are outworking us.
Well, we have that reputation in Europe, too, that we are much hard workers. We don't they mock us because we don't, you know, enjoy the spice of life, as it were, you know, as much. We don't relax. Maybe there's something to that.
Yeah.
But we are, you know, at least our boomer generation was, you know, you got to work. You got to do it all the time, and you got to make it happen. I think, you know, I've heard somebody talk about this the other day, that the one of the reasons why we are so much more prosperous than we have been. In fact, you know, as screwy as our government is right now, and so as messed up as things are, we are actually very much more prosperous than we were 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 50, 100 years ago. I mean, completely. You know, I'm more prosperous than my parents right now than my parents ever dreamed of being, you know. And I didn't go to college, you know, and it's just insane. And a part of that is because our productivity has been able to increase because of innovation and because of cheap energy. Our productivity, and that's really what causes value. If you can go out to your field and harvest, you know, 10 bushels a day of tomatoes, for example, you know, then you're worth so much money an hour. But if you can put some capital to work and build a machine that harvests 1,000 bushels of tomatoes, you know, a day, then your hourly productivity volume and your worth, you know, is hundredfold.
Yeah.
You know, so now you're much more. And why? Because you got more productivity. You're getting more done in less amount of time or in the same amount of time than before, and you're doing it more efficiently.
Does that technology make us, though, lazier, so we're not working as hard?
Yeah,
or are we still working hard and have this?
Well, it gives us free time, of course, to do stuff. And yeah, this I'm holding up my phone, so you know, there's that. And that's really a recent thing. I mean, come on. 15 years ago, we didn't have these things like we do now, and we weren't attached to them at the hip, you know. So it's just funny because you've got so many opportunities to do things, and there are so many more distractions than there ever were before as well, you know. But hard work is a habit. I think it's a cultural thing, and I think it's a habitual thing that that we learn from our parents and learn from our fathers. And but if our parents and fathers were not, you know, if they didn't have the discipline to say, okay, now I've got to go to work, or now it's time to study on a project, or, you know, whatever that you learn. I think your children learn by your example, by watching you more than your words, because words are cheap, and work is showing them is what's more important. So, you know, I think culturally, as Americans, we do work harder. I think we're becoming less and less that culture. I think it's changing, you know.
So tell me about your young employees at this business that you run. Uh-huh. Are you seeing a trend of, well, example, my daughter works at this store that a name I wasn't going to mention, and hopefully nobody
heard. How old's your daughter?
She's 22.
Okay.
And she trained a new guy. Because basically she had to work 14 days in a row because she was the only one that could do that specific job.
Wow.
And so she finally got a new guy trained, and she got talking with the guy, and the guy's like, well, I got kicked out of college. Mm-hmm. And she said, why? And he said, well, she said, why? Are you not, did you not get it? Do you not? He goes, no, I'm just lazy.
Okay.
And she said, so wait, you're smart enough to, and he was majored in engineering in college, smart enough to be an engineer. You have to be pretty sharp to be able to pass some of those classes.
Sure.
And he said, yeah, I'm plenty smart. I got, you know, straight A's in high school, and I was on my way, but I didn't feel like doing the homework. And his GPA was 1.8, and he got kicked out.
Oh, my gosh.
And so she's training him to work in this overnight bakery, and he's like, yeah, I got it. Everything she tried to teach, yeah, I got it. Well, she finally took a day off and let him take the bakery by himself, and he didn't
get it.
Oh, it was bad.
Yeah.
And the second night, she was supposed to have 2 days in a row off. The second night, he got so anxious and upset that he made himself throw up so that he wouldn't have to work anymore. And she got called into work. And,
well, he was right. He is lazy.
Yeah. but she was talking about it. She's like, do you really understand about this stuff? And he goes, well, I'll do it the way you tell me to while you're here, but I'm going to find ways to cut corners. And he says, I'm lazy, and I'm going to find ways to make it easier and faster when you're not here. He told her that right up front.
Yeah, can't cut corners with that kind of stuff.
Well, and she's like, I've worked in a bakery for 10 years.
Yeah.
Well, not 10, it's 7 years. I know the best way to do things.
Yeah.
And this guy, he was like, no, I'm going to do whatever I have to get it done. And
yeah.
So anyway, there was some other problems with the guy too.
So he lasted 2 days.
Basically, they were going to have an intervention with him and the management, and he was either going to be fired or he was going to change his ways.
funny. You know, that's funny because I remember in the 80s coming home from my mission, and to get a job in St. George was so hard.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you applied for a job. If it came, you know, a listing came out in the paper, you know, you were lucky if you were one of six or seven guys applying for that job, you know. Yeah. And that was a landscaping job. You know, that was a drywall job. That was not an easy job, right?
Right.
So, you know, people, you know, the bakery wouldn't put up with that for a minute.
No. They didn't have
to. They wouldn't even try to intervene. Well, dude, I got 15 other guys that want this position.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem with having too much high employment is you can't, you can't be discriminatory with, as an employer.
You have to settle a little
bit. You have to settle with people. But I'll tell you this, the people that work for me, there's a real consistency with the young ones, the high schoolers on their summer jobs and their part-time jobs. I have a lot of success with these kids working hard. They have to be kind of watched because they don't self-motivate very well. But once you give them a task, they jump on it and stuff, and they're usually pretty good once you teach them what they're doing. And they almost always have good attitudes.
That's good. My wife was saying that it's funny about that age that you're talking about, the high school age.
Yeah.
They do not self-motivate. They won't see something and say, I'm going to go do that. They'll say, but if you say, will you go do that, they're actually pretty good. Yeah, they'll go do it.
Yeah, they'll do it. Yeah.
So, but you've got to come up with the idea first, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, 948 on KDXU. Be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy. Jack Lancaster is here. You can text us at 467-5842 and call 673-5890 if you would like to be a part of the show. Jack, this was interesting to me. Last week, the Pope addressed a group of journalists, you know, several hundred journalists in a room.
Did he answer the age-old question?
Which is?
Nothing. Stupid joke.
Oh, yeah, right. Kind of like the old joke, the Pope, pastor, and a rabbit walk into a bar, and the rabbit says, I believe I'm a typo. It's supposed to be rabbi. Yeah, anyway. I got him. Yeah.
I got a Pope joke for you.
Okay.
So one of the cardinals comes into the Pope and says, Your Holiness, I have good news and I said, really wonderful news and I got some bad news. Okay, well, what's the wonderful news?
Oh, I heard this.
Yeah. Oh, you heard this one?
Yeah.
Our Savior's returned. The day has come. Second coming's here. Oh, that's wonderful news. What's the bad news? We've got to go to Salt Lake City to see him. All right, there's that one.
Or St. George, maybe.
I'm a typo.
I'm a typo. So the Pope, addressing this room full of journalists, said somebody asked him about the nature of people. You know, you got serial killers and you got people starting wars, you got all kind of stuff. And the Pope said something that is a little bit of a departure from Catholic
orthodoxy.
He said,
canon.
I believe that people are generally good. People, their hearts are generally good.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you know anything about Catholicism and a religion in general, most religion, the belief is, and I don't want to get into too much religious stuff, the fall of Adam, the original sin, men are born already flawed, already bad.
The natural man is an enemy to God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for the Pope to say, I believe men are essentially good, is a huge departure.
Yes, it is. And that goes along with his left-leaning ideologies on that, because that's one of the things I've noticed is that is one of the biggest differences between a conservative mindset and a left-leaning mindset, is that the conservative assumes that people are going to be selfish and do their own thing, and when they get power, they're going to use it unjustly.
Yeah.
Which is why the founding fathers wrote the Constitution in such a way so
why
that there was
checks and balances.
Yeah. And then, but the other side will say, oh, no, man is inherently good, and he will be altruistic if given the choice, which is not true. And that's a left, I don't like the word liberal when I'm describing the left.
Thousands of years of despots and wars and
if you look at the Dems when they control a city or a state, you know, on their welfare programs and that, and they just assume everybody's out there, you know, honestly and looking for the job to get the unemployment and all that and that. So that just doesn't jive, you know. So,
but interestingly enough, the culture, the religious culture of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints actually falls more in line with the left, which is men are inherently good.
I think there's a difference there because we don't, I say we because I'm a member of that church, and I don't speak for the church. To my understanding, we do not believe in original sin,
right?
And that we have the spark or the light of Christ within us if we seek it, but we can lose it. So, I could be wrong.
Okay,
please don't quote me.
Quote him. I like it. And it'll be forever enshrined on internet podcasts too. So, but the church essentially is very, very conservative, very right-leaning, very conservative, and yet we believe people are good and have, most people, we believe, will do the right thing when given the opportunity. This is a thing that we could spend hours on.
Yeah, I think you could... What is the? There used to be a saying I used to hear all the time: teach them correct principles and let them govern themselves. Mm-hmm. Somebody said that. I think a prophet.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
You know, and I think if you are a moral society, if you're a moral person, if you've been taught moral values, right and wrong, you know, Christian values, then you can be trusted with those types of decisions. But however, if you're not, if you don't have those foundations. Then you become the natural man, if you will. And then now, what is it, your value? Because people will always create a value system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're either taught one, they experience one, they create one. And if the value is me, 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 I don't care about the other person, I'm just about me and my wants and needs and my selfish desires, then that's a value. That's a value to that person.
And that is the opposite of what people, you know, in the church believe that it's not about you, it's about serving others. And and yet then we have, I don't know, the whole thing can be really, we could spend a lot of time on this.
And yeah, and I would probably want to bring in an expert on the subject and instead of me.
You're an expert.
Oh, well, X something.
it's just fascinating to me that the Pope would say men are essentially good when his whole theology.
Yeah, it kind of upends their whole a paradigm. That upends a paradigm. That'd be interesting if he's creating a different shift in. I'd be interested to learn more about that. If he's creating a new I don't know, they use terms in the Catholic Church I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
That they created a whole new doctrine out of it.
Yeah.
You know, if he's doing that or if he's just saying what he says.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Catholics, generally speaking, believe that doctrine doesn't change. That doctrine is eternal and it's been laid down from the beginning.
I would assume so. Yeah. Right.
Not so, like the Mormon church where people believe, and I use Mormon church, and you know what I mean. Anyway, yeah. That doctrine is changing all the time as guided by the leaders.
Right.
So,
well, the Pope is supposed to pontificate.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's the pontiff.
That's right.
So I don't know. I wish I knew more about that, to be honest with you, about what the implications to the wider church are based on that.
We're out of time, Jack. Sorry about it. We just started a topic that probably has...
No, we could have opened up the phone lines and been educated on that one. Let's do it next time.
Next time. Thanks for coming on, Jack.
You're welcome.
Back tomorrow. Chris Stewart.